Hey everyone, welcome to episode 29 of the Meal Mentor Podcast. This is a continuation of episode 28, so this is episode 29 or part two of Nikki's interview with Lindsay on the Meal Mentor Podcast. So here we go, folks.
So to sort of circle, well, one quick circle back, but then also to move on to working out so we can finish up this. It's been so awesome having you on here. I'm going to have you again. But to circle back to our beans, there is an adjustment period. So the advice that Nikki and I were getting to know, to give it time and all that, that's not untrue. There is an adjustment period. If you go from a standard American diet to a plant-based diet with lots of fiber, you're going to have hiccups. You're going to have gas and your stomach's not going to feel great. And it is smarter to ease into it just to let your digestive system catch up. But there, if it's months and months and months and you're still not feeling better, it's something else. It's not just an adjustment.
Yes. I think that that's so true. There is a huge adjustment in the whole baby steps into it. Yeah. You know, definitely try that in the beginning, because whether the fiber, the amount of fiber you're getting, when people say, oh, what about your protein? Well, like what, 97% of people are low on fiber, but
vastly overeating the protein, yeah.
Yeah, but with protein, it's like 97% of people eat too much. So I liked what Rip, I think it was Rip Esselstein said, that one of his things is he said he's never met someone who knows the name for a protein deficiency.
Yeah, it's so rare that it's so rare that no one even knows the medical term for protein deficiency. It's actually very hard to spell and even harder to pronounce.
I don't even know how to pronounce it. I looked at it and I was like,
it's like quackquisher or something like that. I'm saying it wrong, but if I sit here long enough, it'll come out. But yeah, it's like K-W-A-K. It's a strange word. But it's a very valid point, Rip. Very valid point.
But, you know, but that's why I was like, well, I guess he's right, because I've never seen it written down before and I've never said it out loud, nor will I try to. So, but yeah, so then with the fiber, yeah, we all just get too little of it. And that's, but once you're getting good fiber, and if you baby step into it, then your gut's really happy. You know what I mean?
Yeah, really, it's like an oil change for your car, but on a daily basis. It's so good. It's so, when it starts running smoothly after your body adjusts, you're very happy. But sometimes, like, you know, like, when you clean up your diet, sometimes you find out that, hey, I've always had a problem with this. And like you said, you realize as a kid you didn't like something, but it was really, that was just your way of expressing something that was happening in your body that maybe you didn't have the mental maturity to verbalize or even appreciate. But if things start to make sense, but do give yourself some time. But if it's been a long time and you're still not feeling good, elimination diet, some stuff.
Yeah, I think elimination diet is like a godsend, you know. It's
eat some potatoes till you regulate, you'll be fine, you'll be okay. And speaking of protein, you could literally eat nothing but potatoes all day and still you meet your protein needs, so no worries about protein ever.
Exactly. I was gonna say McDougal will tell you all about how you could live off potatoes alone. Yeah. So your elimination diet for a few days is not gonna hurt you.
It's not gonna hurt you. You're gonna be fine. And I always tell people, I'm like, go ahead. You have stored energy. Reach down and pinch it. It's right there. Let you know. You're all right. You're not gonna die.
My grandma Jackie, who is one of my best friends, she passed away like 15 years ago now. But she always said, if you can pinch it, you got plenty.
You're going to get through to the next day.
If you can pinch it, then you know you're fat if you can pinch it, which is really funny because, you know, she was very petite, and I actually have more of her build. I have more to pinch than she ever had.
She did.
But growing up, you know, I was starting to grow up in this world where obesity really was becoming a bigger thing. And looking around, I thought, she has got to be crazy. You could pinch it. That's just skin, right?
Yes.
Skin. Like, there was an acceptance level as to, like, how much you can pinch, you know, and still be okay. But yeah, I think elimination diets are great, and you're not going to starve, you know, but it's,
I mean, you'll be bored to tears, but in the end, it's worth it. Even if it takes mine, it was like a 6-month all said and done process, but by the end, I knew exactly what I could have. I knew exactly what was going to make me not feel good. And I've been living free and happy ever since. So, every now and then, you know, I test it, you know, hey, let me just see. Oh, yep. Okay. Still bad. Yep. Yeah.
Because you never know, your body can change so much. Mm-hmm. It can hate one thing one day, love it the next year, you know. But I think also the bored to tears when you said that, it makes me laugh because it's true, because that goes back to us being so food-based.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think my biggest suggestion for that, I think, is what I found last year with, I started doing hot yoga, and it's like when I came back to just completely dedicated plant-based, and it's nice because you just find something else to have a passion for and obsession mm-hmm. over, you know, and realize that food is like very minimal short-term happiness. But if you find something fitness-related or active, you know, then obsess over that, because that can help you get through your, you know, I don't need food to make me happy anymore as much as I used to, at least. And I think it's really because I've put my passion somewhere else and realized that if you find something else that you can put passion towards, or that you have a passion, a natural, you know, inkling to, a niche for, then you can reroute that need for like food satisfaction and happiness to something that's actually going to build you a storage of happy.
Mm-hmm.
Like
that's
fitness,
great advice.
You know, like being in fit or being healthy versus, not just with what you're putting in your mouth, but how you're using your body. And I personally love yoga, and I love, good sweats and workouts as well. But, those things make me feel good. Well, in the time during them, sometimes I just want to yell at whoever is telling you
to get into words. Who? No, sink down. I hate you, yoga man.
Yeah. Can you go squat lower? Huh? You know, downward dog. Can you put your tailbone to the sky a little higher?
No,
push
okay.
harder. I know you can do it. And you're just like, oh, I know where I could push harder.
Yeah, I know where I can push.
But then afterwards, I mean, I have an entire day of good, a much better mood the rest of the day if I wake up at 6:30 and work out, you know. And so that is going to give you a lot longer term happiness anyway. So
and
the
you
food
feel just, better about yourself too. Usually when you eat something for happiness, you end up feeling unhappy about it for a very long time thereafter.
Yeah, well,
as I say, the 10 minutes in my mouth was not nearly as long as the time I pay for it after. But with yoga or any, you know, exercise that makes you feel good, you feel good while you're doing it. Well, maybe there are parts during that you're a little unhappy, but it stays with you the whole day. And then you feel good about yourself, and you continue to feel good for yourself days and days after. Like, I'm so glad I had that. I just worked it out. I stretched my body. And then you often see it, and you're like, hey, look at that. You know, I'm really starting to get some muscle in my arm from all those down dogs.
Exactly. Well, yeah, and every time you get to go to child's pose, you're happy for the moment for, you know, 5 seconds before they're like, okay, upward dog again. But downward
I love
dog.
That. Wait, hold on. Yeah.
Yeah. Can we go to Warrior 3 one more time? I'm like,
Can we sing a child's pose?
Yeah.
Because I'm doing it real good right now.
Yeah, I love the whole, like, just remember when you're in child's pose, it's not a you don't need to be resting completely. Let's work it. Still stretch those fingers farther. I'm like, oh, no. No, I'm going to enjoy the moment for a second. But yeah, I think that's a way to escape this whole food predicament. I mean, especially, like, when I've done cheats or been like, oh, you know, my 10th anniversary, wedding anniversary is coming up on the 2nd, on Thursday.
Oh, congratulations. Happy anniversary.
Thanks. And, you know, we're like, oh, we could go to dinner, or we could do this, you know, we could do that. And it's like, yeah, I could splurge at that moment and be like, you know, I would still stay plant-based, but, you know, maybe have some extra dessert or something. But it's like, I found that, the first bite of something tastes really good,
mm-hmm.
you know, but you eat, like, I'll give an example. Growing up, I loved Cheez-Its. Those baked, that burnt, almost burnt cheese taste, I loved it. I thought it was the greatest thing ever. They hated me. I knew that. They hated me. It was a love hate very much. But I loved them, you know, I ate them. But the first one tasted good. And then you spend the entire box trying
to
get
to it.
Mm-hmm. That excitement back. And I remind myself of those things. I try and remind myself of those things when I want to grab a snack or I'm at an event or a party or something and I'm like, well, technically it has no animal. You know, I could eat that, you know. Well, yeah, the first bite's going to taste great, but then you're only going to keep eating because it's either social or you're trying to get back that first taste of satisfaction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a point of diminishing return, and I'm like, you got to find that. You got to find – it's usually within three bites, as you said, is the point of diminishing return. And, yeah, I love that you're saying this because I had this exact same experience, I realized, with cheesecake, even including vegan cheesecake. I love it. But after like two or three bites, it's like I'm either eating it to be social. I'm eating it because I've conditioned myself to finish whatever I'm eating, which is never good. I need to give up my membership to the Clean the Plate Club. But also, what? I'm trying to get back to that first thing. And with drug users, they call it chasing the dragon, that you're always trying to get back to that first high you ever had. Like you're always trying to get back to it, but you never can. And it's like the one Cheez-It. You never get back to the one Cheez-It.
Yeah, that's like, it might be TMI, but... you know, with the drugs that I've heard people, you know, when I was younger, E was like a big thing, starting to become a big thing. They have one that's even like the pink elephant or purple elephant. And I've got a thing with elephants too, you know. So that was always like, oh, people were like crazy about that stuff. And I was like, no, thank you. Drugs have never been an interest of mine. But they do have those sayings with the drugs. It's like, you're always trying to chase that first high. You're always trying. They say don't do certain drugs and have sex or you'll never enjoy sex again. You
I've
know?
Heard that too. And I always wondered if that was rumor. I never tried, so I don't know. But I don't want to risk it.
Exactly. I mean, like, I quite enjoy it myself. So yeah, I don't really want. No, I actually met one person that did tell me, like, that, you know, if you do something your first time of, they had, you know, done a lot of trial and error, I guess, with drugs, you could say. And they said, you know, anything that they did that first time that they tried something new, it doing that activity is ruined from then out because I don't know what happens to you. But I like what you said just now about the finishing your plate. That's exactly my thought that flew away.
Oh, hey, look at that. We came back.
So, my meditation music in the beginning must have actually worked for something there. I think it returned. It came full circle. But, yes, that connection. So what I was saying with parenting, I'm just going to add that in and we can talk some more about the exercise. But with parenting, I think, you know, we do have that membership to finishing your plate. And your plate should be full, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I have two suggestions. I am by far, way far from perfect. But these are two things that in our household have started to help. One, we do not use full-size plates. I use salad plates for meals.
Oh, we do too. Works so good.
Your plate looks full, so you trick your silly mind into thinking that you're getting more. And two, I do not make my children eat. We sit at the table as a family because I think it's a good time to connect because we all have busy lives. And while I still can, I will do that with them. We sit together at the table and I do serve their plate. And like I said earlier, I put everything that we're eating, I put on their plate. Even when my son's like, ah! You know, I make sure things aren't touching, but they have to look at it, you know? And if they don't want to eat it, they don't have to eat it. I do not make the struggle. I was always like, you have to have as many bites as you are old. That was in our household.
Oh, I love that.
And I did that, and I did that with my kids at first. But then I realized, like, my mealtime was hell for me. Because not only have I spent an hour cooking dinner, I've now served plates of food my kids don't want to eat. And then I have to sit there and count their bites. When am I going to enjoy the food I ate? I don't even have an appetite for food anymore, you know? It makes mealtime miserable, for us at least. And so what Kevin and I have found works, and it's slow, but it works, is by not forcing them to eat. If they don't want to eat dinner, they don't have to, but they don't get – I'm not serving a second meal. They're not eating anything else. And – some people look at that like, oh my gosh, it's torture. How could you put your kids to bed if they haven't eaten? I'm like, if they are hungry, there's nothing wrong with them eating the lettuce that was on their plate, you know? I know they like it if I've got the right dressing on it. So it's not like they can't try it, you know? My youngest will eat three plates of spinach and mustard and balsamic vinegar dressing. That's it. Like, he'll just eat plates of it. And, but, you know, some things they won't touch. And so I have some mornings where my kids wake up really hungry for our overnight oats, you know? And, but it's worked because my son eats tomato, avocado, mushrooms, things that he's seen on his plate forever, has never eaten before, ever. And within a week, he tried one, and then he realized, well, I tried that, and I liked it, so maybe I should just try these others. And, well, we had friends over the other day for, we had some chips. My daughter bought some chips, and she made guacamole because she's learning how to cook, and she can make guacamole. And he's like, oh, well, maybe I should try avocado. And so no pressure, and he just ate it. And so
that's,
I think,
awesome.
But what I, my argument towards that is, I have a, I had a lot of like issues from childhood, and a lot of them comes back to that power struggle that you have, and how, you know, eat your whole plate. You have to eat the whole plate, and then, I mean, then now we have a complex because we have to eat, and now we've made food a struggle or a fight, and now we have an unhealthy relationship with food. And I think that's what I'm trying to avoid with my kids, is I don't want them to have that unhealthy relationship with food, like to love it and hate it, or starve themselves and then fill themselves, you know, binge eat. And so I don't have the whole clear your plate mentality. And I don't know what other moms are really doing these days or not with that. I don't have a lot of mom friends, but you know, it's like I have bananas in the house all the time. So I'm like, if you're really starving, eat a banana. But if you didn't eat dinner, I'm not making you a second dinner.
And that's how I was raised. I went to bed hungry, and I, you know, probably thought my mom was mean, but I appreciate it a lot now as an adult. She wasn't a short order chef, and if I didn't want to eat peas, then, well, too bad. You know, like, that was what she served. And I think now that was totally normal. I remember that's how my friends' moms were too. And now it seems like that's mean or strict or whatever. But that was my parents' parenting style. And I appreciate it a lot now at 33. I was probably a little brattier about it when I was a kid. But I appreciate it very much now.
I think we were brattier about everything when we were kids. But
True, yeah.
But I think that is important, because I just see some people who, I mean, who wants mealtime to be miserable anyway?
True. Very true. And it already can be so contentious with kids already, because they're so picky and their tastes are changing and they're unfamiliar and they find a lot of discomfort with new things. So there's just a lot going on.
Yeah, and I always try and make sure that there's something in our meal that I know that they are used to, or that they like. Maybe the flavor is slightly different, but something familiar, so it's not a completely strange plate.
Mm-hmm.
And if they choose not to eat it, it's just because they're being picky. And my oldest is so funny, because she's just turned 12, so she's kind of hitting that hormonal shifting, and which is so weird to have a child going through that. It's so strange. But I look at her, and she's a lot like me. She's a feisty one, but she has such a big heart. She just is hilarious, and she looks at me, and she looks at her siblings, and she's just like, last night my son was my youngest son was like being picky, and or the night before last, and she's like, you do not eat food for fun. Food is to fuel your body so that you stay alive and healthy, so that you can do things that are fun.
Yes,
like,
exactly.
Stop complaining about what's on your plate, because it's going to give you energy to swim tomorrow, so you should just shut up and eat it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Without saying shut up, I don't do that at the dinner table, but you know, I just thought it was funny, because it's a great, I would love for my kids to grow up like that, you know, not thinking of food as something that's supposed to be like overly enjoyable and has to be the thing that you look forward to in the day.
Absolutely. And that echoes another podcast. A mom said that she's been trying to teach her daughter that you don't miss out on food. You can miss out on a play day. You can miss out on a movie. You can miss out on a memory. But, like, you should never feel like you're missing out when it comes to food. And I think that's exactly what you're saying here, that food isn't the entertainment. is what allows you to enjoy yourself in the entertainment. And it's like we were talking about in the beginning, it's their food is just like, everything is food, everything's linked to food, and we need to get away from that. And like, I have this rule where if I want to see my friends, we can't eat. We have to go hiking, we have to go to yoga class, we have to go to the park, we have to go to a movie, which is something with no food, because I don't want my... Because I want to be with my friend. I don't want to be like making it all about what are we eating? What are you eating? I don't know. Where are we going to go? What do we eat? This has 1,000 calories. I don't want that. I want to enjoy being in the presence of the person that I love.
Yeah. I always, I'm the same way. I'm even that way with like Christmas and presents. Mm-hmm. I'm like, we live minimally, like a minimalist lifestyle, even with 4 kids. People come over and they're like, how do you have 4 kids? You can't even tell. And it's because I'm like, I don't want more toys to be broken. I don't need more stuff. Mm-hmm. I don't need, like, they don't need to be, just because we're at the store doesn't mean we need to buy a treat.
Right.
Just because my mom comes to hang out doesn't mean we need candy now, too, or ice cream, which is my family's go-to. It's the only time I went to a regular grocery store growing up was not to buy fresh vegetables that Costco didn't carry. No, it was to buy ice cream. And so, you know, you try and teach them that so that you're like, you know, it doesn't need to be focused on food. And I always tell my parents, like, it doesn't need to be a present. It's not like how much money can I spend on you. Like, give them an experience. Give them a memory. Because the food, like, I remember I had cheesecake at my wedding. Because, I have a very bad, you know, addiction to cheesecake if I let myself near it. I don't even let myself near vegan kind because it will start an epidemic.
Mm-hmm. That's how I am with dehydrated mango and brownies. I hear you.
Yeah. So, and so cheesecake was my crutch, but you know, otherwise who remembers like, oh, that moment in my life was so
right? Good. Such
and
a good point.
And I ate
such
blah,
a good
blah.
Point. Mm-hmm.
You know, like I don't remember what I ate at the Elephant Bar the night my husband proposed to me, but I remember the adventure that we went on getting lost in San Francisco to the beach that I'd been to a million times. I remember all that stuff. So it's like we remember moments and memories, and so let's focus on making those better and then just eating to fuel our bodies so we can experience those. And if it's enjoyable, the better, you know?
Yes, that's such a good point. I love that you point out. I don't remember what I ate when I got engaged. I was just thinking about, I don't know what I ate when I got engaged. I don't know what I ate when I met my boyfriend or my now husband. I'm like, I don't remember any of this crap. Like, I really don't. And it's also like people always ask me what was the last meal I ate that was meat. I have no idea. I've picked a memory to go with because yeah. I feel like I need to have an answer, but I'm not entirely sure it's accurate. But anyway.
Yeah.
But to sort of come back to fuel, because that really kind of parlays into fitness. So that's something that's really kind of been great for me, too, is I've really fell in love with yoga. I started doing yoga because, like, we both have had depression. I started doing yoga to kind of deal with my depression and my OCD and my anxiety. It's done wonders for me. I just love it. I just really love it, and I feel so good about myself when I do it. I feel good when I do it, except for when I'm cursing the yoga man for making me do, you know, downward dog again. But you know, I really love it, and fitness is absolutely something that can fit into a plant-based lifestyle. You don't have to. If it's not your thing, that's cool. Find another hobby that's fun. But it's definitely something, and it's not something you need to worry about. People are like, ooh, I work out. Do I need extra protein? No. You don't need extra stuff.
That's where the world gets in. Like that, I get stumped on that too sometimes because my husband will be like, well, you know, he gets to the point where he's just starving during the day and he's trying to figure out how many calories, and we do the meal plans, you know, and I usually try and make enough for leftovers for his lunches versus making extra lunches just because he's avoiding beans as well right now to see if he feels any better because, you know, broccoli isn't his friend and beans aren't necessarily ones I like him having either. But yeah, I think that you get stuck on this idea that you need all of this protein. But then I found this this other coach that I follow. She, for fitness, just recently went plant-based, like actually calls it plant-based, not vegan. And I guess, do you know who Tony Robbins is?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, familiar.
Yeah, so I guess he promotes plant-based at his retreats, the wellness retreats.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so she went plant-based on a whim with her Starbucks in hand at the last day of a 3-day wellness and change your life kind of event. that she went to of his, and he talked about the benefits of that, and they went plant-based. So, but she was talking about being alkalized.
Right.
And how if your body's not acidic, which it shouldn't be if you're eating plant-based.
Yeah, it's mostly, I mean, there are a few plant foods that are acidic, but by far and large is animal products that are acidic in the body. And just to clarify real quick, acidic doesn't mean, like, we think of lemons and limes as acidic, but that doesn't mean they're acidic in the body. They're actually very alkaline.
I was just going to say that. The citruses that we look at as acidic
are not actually
behave acidically in our body. And so typically you are, as after you've transitioned into a plant-based lifestyle, your body isn't typically acidic. And if it's not acidic, you actually need a lot less protein than you do if you are acidic.
Well, that's interesting. I didn't know that. I mean, I know that we're more alkaline in a plant-based diet, and it does all kinds of wonderful things.
Yeah, so your actual...
That's interesting about your need going down. I mean, and the need is little. It's like 10% of your calories.
Yeah, I mean, it ends up being like... So I guess what happened, what she was explaining and what my husband was clarifying, because he is super into reading that kind of stuff, and he remembers it all. Like, I have to read it 5 million times. but he said that, yeah, if you're not acidic, then your body's actually being able to utilize the protein that you're eating better than if you are acidic. You're having to eat more of it because you're not processing it correctly. Kind of like people who drink milk, you know, and they're like, oh, you need the calcium, which really you're
actually giving yourself osteoporosis because you're...
Well, and your body is... You're leaching calcium from your bones, which means they have to fortify the milk with calcium to try and make up for what the milk is doing to you. And so I think that's kind of how I looked at it when I was reading about the protein, is like, if you're acidic, you have to eat the stuff that's making you acidic. You have to eat more of that just so that your body can actually get enough protein through your system.
Yep.
If you're not acidic, you don't need as much protein going through your system because you kind of utilize in a plant-based diet, I think. Everything that you do eat, you basically get to utilize if you're doing it right.
Yeah, and it's like, I think what it is that when you're alkaline, you can just access, like, you can access more of the bioavailability of foods, because all foods have, like, a various bioavailability. Like, there might be, you know, so much vitamin C in an orange. That doesn't mean, even though that orange possesses that much, that doesn't mean your body's actually going to tap in and take all of it.
No.
And this is probably where this whole, and I think this is really fascinating. I think you've just set me off on a research path that's going to take up the rest of my day. But anyway, I think that's what this is it's like when you are alkaline, when you're plant-based, you're not eating all this acid crap, you just can take more out of the orange.
Yeah. Yeah, your body
that makes
actually,
a lot of sense to me.
It's your body actually knows how to, your body has the ability to utilize it versus having to pump more of that orange through you to get the same amount, you know? You can eat half an orange for what you had to eat an whole orange for before, kind of a thing.
Yeah, I love that. I think it's true. I mean, it makes absolute perfect sense. If your body's up and running as it's supposed to, and our body's natural pH balance is an alkaline state, not an acidic state. So if you're being more true to what your body, and your body's not working to get itself to where it wants to be, you just leave it there.
Yeah.
I think it just is better overall. And then too, you know, this whole thing, like the pre-workout, post-workout shake, protein supplement, that was all created by the gym industry to make money. Let's be real.
Yeah.
One meal is a drop in the bucket. It really is. I mean, one shake in the span of a whole week, or even four times in the week, isn't going to make... It's all about a good diet consistently, so your body is just building perfectly all the time. It's like putting the right gas in your car. You know, one gallon of premium gas is not making a difference.
No, I think that I think people that you replace like a meal, their morning breakfast, if they like, I can't eat solid foods very often in the morning. It just like right after I get up, if I wait too long, I feel like, oh my gosh, I'm like dizzy, nauseous, I need to eat something. But if I eat something too heavy, then it kind of just puts me in a blah mood. So I've kind of, you know, I for years relied on like green smoothies, you know, for breakfast. But the whole protein pre-workout, post-workout, I work out every single day and I don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
But when I did do that, because my husband and I, you know, we've tried the whole rainbow of things,
Oh, I did it too. I dropped hundreds and hundreds of dollars down and was like obsessive. Like, I have to time it. I have to have my pre-workout shake. Like right now. Okay, time it. All right, go work out right now with my personal trainer. Okay, time it. My shake. Oh my, exactly. I made myself crazy. Didn't see results.
I had a friend of mine who's one of my best friends. She's a nurse and she works in wound care, and she was concerned about, it was one of those people that got into my head when I stepped away from like being 100% plant-based for 2 months, and it was the worst 2 months ever. Like, cause once you know what's good, mm-hmm. bad feels so much worse.
Oh yeah, that's so true.
But she was saying, you know, you can't heal, you don't get enough protein to heal your body. You might be able to survive, but you're going to heal slower. And all this stuff. So, you know, in the end, ended up taking that course in nutrition that taught her that stuff. And I was like, oh, this is such bogus. But I was like, okay, fine. I want to work out and get fit. Then I'm going to – and my husband and I both dropped like $700 on the, you know, vitamins and minerals and post and pre and the gummy bears that they want you to eat to sugar you up or whatever. And I hit burnout so bad. I burnt out. It was a burnout, and it was like I didn't want a single thing to do with exercise for months, and was so sad because I loved my hot yoga classes so much. But when you hit burnout,
you were burnt out.
Yeah, but you're just burnt out, and those shakes didn't get me anywhere. Like I was building some muscle, but none of the pudge. The muscle was very well protected.
was well insulated, as we like to say.
Yeah, none of those were going to get hurt by anything exterior means. And so I think that I love it when I see like dancers or other people who eat plant based come out and they're like, look, they're lean, they're fit. It's not about how many muscles show, you know, how ripped you are. It's just ridiculous how much energy and time you have to put into keeping that up anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But doing something that's manageable, figuring out what workouts you enjoy, if you can find one that you enjoy, that's a lot better. Like I personally, well, I guess I could just do yoga outside right now. I live in Arizona and I could be doing hot yoga. And sweating pools, but I need to find a place to go here. But then on top of that, I like getting a good workout in and a good sweat otherwise, because I feel like hot yoga is one, it's an exercise, definitely it works. Yeah. And whether it's hot yoga or regular yoga, yoga is a great exercise for flexibility, strength, and yoga is mental for me. It's so mental. I do meditations anyway, and I do a lot of I ams.
I love that.
I have an I am mantra. I have a dream board wall, actually. It's like photo wall that people put together of their family, which is really funny because my photo wall has like strangers on it from internet pictures of what I want my world to look like. My bedroom's probably odd to people, but but that's where Wayne Dyer, he's a great person to follow for if you want to get into the mental health, the meditative space. And he does the whole I ams. You know, when you say I am sick and you're calling in sick for work, even if you're lying, you're saying you're sick. You're talking about it so much, you feel sick when you're done. Whether you feel sick because you lied or what, I think it has to do with the fact that you actually been just saying to the universe, I'm sick, for 5 minutes to get through that phone call. So when we think about the positives, then you create more positives. And so that's what I do. I get into my I am space and I am, and I say I am whatever it is that I want to be or become as if I already am that. And so yoga has really been something that connects me to yoga meditation. That whole area is awesome. And then I started doing a workout that incorporates yoga and like constant movement of cardio, but it's in yoga moves, to get a good sweat, and started panicking. You know, every time somebody challenges you, you know, sometimes you get weak and you're like, oh wait, do I need more protein? What am I doing? And
I tell people, like, if you're tired and lethargic, you need a potato.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, because I can't do beans, you know, now that I'm, like, coming, you know, realized, you know, I can't do these beans, then it's like, you know, you get this doctor in your head going, well, what do you use for protein? And usually you shut doctors up by saying beans.
Yeah.
Now you can't say that.
Now you can say greens, spinach, now. But it's in all, like I said, it's in all foods, even kale and bananas and apples and so.
Oh, it's in everything.
It's one of those other things. We're food obsessed and we're obsessed with the protein word. It makes me crazy.
We're obsessed with things that have no meaning, and the things that mean something we don't worry about.
Mm-hmm.
Goes back to your fiber versus protein. Anytime somebody says, what do you do for protein? You say, what do you do for fiber?
I do that. I mean, it's when I'm feeling snarky. Like, sometimes if they're genuinely, like, they just don't know, they're not being a jerk, you know, I try to have a more humble response. But when people are being, like, super snooty, I'm like, where do you get your fiber and water-soluble vitamins? Because they can't ever answer me.
I know. I love the whole, well, you're in California. All my family that I'm close to are in California, and the whole water shortage thing and all the images you see online, and everyone's like, oh, but they didn't put any restrictions on the agriculture, blah 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 blah, the plants, and they grow so much and they grow all of our food, and they need to put restrictions on that, because, you know, it is true that, like, the restrictions on, like, people's personal water usage is not going to make a dent. But I'm like, how about the fact that all the freaking produce that
I know,
we have.
It makes me so mad that they're, like, beating up on almonds, but nobody wants to talk about, like, how much water is being wasted with animals.
I know. I love the NPR had these guys come on and were, like, these farmers, that nut farmers and stuff, and they're, like, talking about how many, like, it takes a gallon of water to grow one almond. But, like, how many gallons of water does it take to feed a cow?
Yeah, is it? I think, I don't know if it's, like, a perfect statistic, but it's something like a hamburger is a gallon, or no, a hamburger is a swimming pool of water.
Okay, so, Drina Burton.
Or something like that.
Plant-based kitchen.
Yeah, I know who she is.
Her daughter, she just posted online, her daughter did, she did a little speech at school on why we should not eat animals. It was like, she's 10 and she had to write a speech about something she cared about, and that's what she chose. And it's totally in 10-year-old writing. It's so cute. But she says that in her comparison was, eating a burger is like 3 months of water for us.
Hmm.
So eating one burger takes as much water to make one burger. We could drink for 3 months and be hydrated.
That's incredible.
So I thought that was, I mean, it could probably look like a pool. I have a pool in my backyard now. I might drink that much in 3 months. I don't know, but that's a lot of water. And
it's a lot of water.
I mean, they don't necessarily keep the cows very clean, but, you know, they're hosing down the mud they're stomping on all the time. You know, you've got so much going into that. And my husband's a geographer. City and community, environmental planning, sustainability stuff. So we have a lot of passions in this house towards the environment. And he said even if he didn't have an issue with eating animals, he could never go back to it after learning what he has, and especially his last year of school he finished, because you learn about how unsustainable it is.
Mm-hmm.
And how much the world suffers from having to, I mean, we grow enough wheat to feed the world just to feed animals, you know, something that they don't even want to, you know, eat, or their bodies aren't even made to digest.
And it's the corn that we give them, what does their stomachs, is awful.
It is horrible. And
a great documentary on that is King Corn, by the way. Highly recommend if you need another one to watch.
Yeah, I don't actually think I've seen that one.
Oh, it was my gateway movie, even though it's not plant-based agenda at all. I was like, wow.
Yeah, it is. It's fascinating when he would come home, because, I mean, his professors aren't plant-based, and none of them are even vegetarian, you know. But the knowledge they have as to what it's doing and how unsustainable it is, like, it's just, we have to move away from that if we're going to survive in the numbers that we have anyway. And so I think there's so many different reasons why people come to this and drive, and then we have to try and sift through all this brainwashing and upbringing that we've had in this world of food and nutrition and what you're supposed to do. I mean, if you decided today to like question something, you could go out and find something that was said one thing and the exact opposite and 50 doctors to back it up, you know? It's a confusing world out there.
Well, and we want to hear good news about our bad habits, and people pay to hear good news about their bad habits, and it's just, it's, you have to,
it is hard.
You have to seek your truth, and you have to, but I really do think if you sit back and you think, it will just, it'll come into focus for you, and you'll be like, I see now.
And yes, and I think that that's what's great about the plant-based world. I feel like after having my husband and I gone through so many different, you know, diets and rule books, because we were raised very rule book oriented. And so I think we kept searching like, okay, well now we aren't living by the rule book our parents raised us with. And so we did then went for food and we're like, there's gotta be a rule book for food. Like there's a rule book for everything, right? We have to follow something to the T. And what I think is great about so many of the people like you and other people who are advocates for, this herbivore lifestyle, plant-based lifestyle, is that seems so much more genuine. Like if you get into other diets and lifestyles, you know, people that people consider their lifestyle, like paleo and other things, there's so many marketing. It's almost marketing or something. Like it's like get on our bandwagon and join our club, you know. But it's when we had issues there and we turned to people to ask for help and stuff, we didn't have the kind of community that you offer or other plant-based, you know, weekends and that kind of stuff that you can get on board with. And so it's kind of like, oh, well, you shouldn't be having that problem because this is awesome. Mm-hmm. The red meat anyway, you know, push your body through it because it's what you're supposed to do instead of just like, hey, you know, eat more vegetables. I think every single diet you look at, even in nursing school, I was taught about how much vegetable we need to be eating and stuff. But then when it comes to like the food pyramid and everything else, they don't follow. You don't see that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But in biology, while my teacher's downing her Diet Coke, mm-hmm. she's telling us that Coke rocks your stomach lining. And, you know, she's telling us these things that you are learning in the science world that supports a plant-based lifestyle, but society like teaches you it because they have to, I guess, for education. I don't know why they teach it to you, because then you don't see it relayed in the grocery store or on your food pyramid or
in the lunchroom. And
in the lunchroom, people, when you hear moms talk about how great the lunchroom food is becoming because it's all changing to better, I'm like, do you have lunch with your kids? Because I pack my kids' lunch every day. Do I wish that I didn't have to sometimes and I could just send them with money? Heck yeah. Everything
you're
is...
like, I'm a mom of four. Of course, I'd love that, but...
it's time for money, you know? Everything's time or money or both, you know? And it's like, I would love that. But then this last year, I got to eat lunch at school with my kids often. And I'm shocked when the office lady's like, oh, are you gonna buy lunch today? It's such and such. Oh, it's so good. And you go and it's like plastic on a plate.
Ew, yuck. Gross.
You know, and so
I know I'm having like bad flashbacks to forgetting my lunch and having to buy school cafeteria food like 5 times in my life. I'm like, oh god, no, bad.
Oh, I know. I used
bless
to love
my mother for making my sandwich every day.
See, exactly. I was the kind that had like 5 peanut butter and jelly sandwiches in the bottom of my school backpack because I would like tell my teacher I forgot it so I could get hot lunch and be like the other kids.
Oh.
And now I wish I would have eaten all those peanut butter and jelly sandwiches that my mother eventually found like with mold on it.
Oh god, that's terrible.
In the bottom of my backpack. I mean, all of my siblings, we did that. And I think that, you know, it goes back to wanting to fit in, you know.
Mm-hmm. Back to the tribe.
Yep, back to tribal mentality and just teaching your kids that. I've been just trying to teach my kids, like, make friends with people who have passions like you do. And then don't worry about what they put in their mouth versus your mouth at lunchtime. Because that's so minuscule in the big scheme. Like, you don't just sit on your bed and gossip with your girlfriends about food, do you? You know, like, let's
true.
Not.
Such a good point.
let's not let that determine whether or not we like each other or whether or not we can be friends, or, you know, lead by example, but don't suffocate people with it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, Nikki,
but I do like all the shirts. I just need to have shirts that
shirts with all these phrases. I want a shirt that says "Take me out of the crab box."
Yeah, no kidding. I'm not a crab.
And away from the crab check.
Yeah.
But anyway, it has been so amazing to have you on. I'm going to have you on again because we've had way too much. This has been such an incredible podcast, and I think it's going to be my favorite of the year. Thank you so much for joining. I'm going to definitely have you back. Please, if you haven't read her kid's story on happyherbivore.com, Maddie Herbie of the Week, which is also just incredible and so touching. And if you want to learn more about all we've been talking about, the meal plans, the forums, the online community, all that, it's at getmealplans.com. I'm Lindsay from Meal Mentor. Thank you, Nikki, so much. There's been so many good points that you said today. I actually filled 7 pages of paper, so I have no idea how I'm going to summarize this, but thank you.
Thank you.